Actually, it's easy just to think about that Gaia is, they are together.
They don't come together, because
through
they are together.
Yes. Otherwise, it means another. The visible object and
it's still, she's talking about the internet, and that's the meeting between the different dance, but when we're talking about the rupas arising together in a kalapa, it means they have already arisen together, so it's different from
meeting together. So this is Tupakana and Chichirisika.
Following on from that, because this was in the context of Gaya Viveka and then the other kinds of Viveka, because we were stressing on Gaya as referring to the groups of rupas arising together, coming together in that sense, and Viveka means detachment from Kalesa, referring to moments of kusala, especially with understanding. So is it similar to talking about kayanupasana or seclusion from when there is detachment from clinging to those sense objects?
It depends on panya. Without panya, it cannot be understood.
When it's talking about kaya viveka, then I think there are two meanings. In one sense, it's talking about detachment from what is seen or heard or from different rupas.
Is this kaya viveka?
If there is understanding at this moment, it's kaya viveka.
Even if there is understanding, like Ananda, he still kept with the others.
Yes. Well, what I understood is that there are two meanings of kaya viveka. So if one's talking about someone like Mahakasapa, who lived in the forest and lived alone and was bodily seclusion and attaining of jhanas with understanding, then that is one meaning of kaya viveka. And the other meaning refers to any moment when there is understanding and detachment from sense objects. Is that
because
correct?
There is also other word, citta viveka.
Yes. So the citta viveka is any moment of understanding and detachment from what is experienced. So when it's kaya viveka, it must refer to the understanding whilst one is in the quiet place, like Mahakasapa. Mm-hmm. So yes. If one's talking about Ananda's understanding of rupas or detachment from rupas, we wouldn't call that kaya viveka, only citta viveka. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
So viveka is not just be alone with attachment.
No.
But detachment.
Be alone with understanding,
yeah.
Yes. So only at moments like Mahakasapa, when one is physically alone, then it can be kaya viveka. So if Ananda were to go for a walk in the forest on his own, then one could refer to kaya viveka.
Kaya, not only citta viveka.
If one is alone in the forest but has no understanding, is that kaya viveka also?
Yeah. It has to mean seclusion from attachment. It has to mean no moments of understanding, moments of no clinging to sense objects.
But seclusion from attachment refers to citta, to the mind,
yes.
Not
depending
to the body.
Among the others, around, or just alone. When it's alone, it's also kaya viveka.
But it needs to have understanding also.
Otherwise, each word of the Buddha must be understanding.
So that means that the word viveka includes understanding. Or
otherwise, everyone be alone viveka.
Yeah, exactly.
In a day.
Yeah.
So it means detachment from kalesa, and that's the difference between how the Buddha used the word viveka and teachers before who taught about Viveka has just talked about the advantage of physical seclusion or living in the forest or something like this, but if it's with attachment, it's not Viveka.
Before the Buddha, there was always a tradition in India to go and live in the forest, right? So we don't call that Viveka because there was no understanding.
What I'm curious about there are jhanas. What about the, you know, the jhana labhis prior to the Buddha's time? Wouldn't they have kaya viveka? Because Kunrati was just talking about going to forest, which has been a tradition, say in India, Jambudipa. What about the yogis who develop jhana? Wouldn't that be kaya viveka?
No, right, understanding. So it's he who's alone.
Oh, okay, all right.
Yeah, because even when one has attained the fifth jhana or rupa jhana, they have to begin again to understand the moment, which is not self.
And if kaya viveka actually only refers to those like kasapa or those occasions when one is physically alone,
I think that also when they take a rest.
Oh, when they take a rest, when yes. They're alone, yes. But we were talking about the meaning of kaya as referring to the rupas together or arising together. And so there is kaya, whether one's with people like now or not with people. So why does this meaning of kaya refer to just when one is alone?
I think that to be alone is benefit. Would you like to see, to associate with the others when you have no attachment? When you are among those people who are interested in the teachings and you help them, then even you are alone, but at that time, it's not just like when you have a rest by being alone.
Mm-hmm. And the Buddha taught about how actually the meaning of being alone, like Tamika Jala, it's not being in the forest, but even surrounded by people in the village, because it depends on the understanding at the moment. So if there is understanding that visible object and sound are just rupas which come together as in groups as kaya, it doesn't make any difference whether one's in that village or in the quiet place, because they're still just visible object, still just sound.
Don't you want to be alone in a day?
Often, mm-hmm. But usually out of attachment.
See, so this is just the way you live.
Yes,
yeah.
So just wanting to be alone is not enough. There must be understanding also. But there is a difference between being amongst people and being alone. So someone with understanding can see the benefit of being alone, actually being alone, as against being with people.
Because when you are not alone, what would you say? Many.
Yeah. So I don't think it literally means being alone. One can be in a crowd of people. And if there's understanding there, if the understanding is arising, then they are literally alone, because there's the concentration on the understanding. And one can be alone and still be in a crowd of people, or literally be in a forest. It doesn't matter where.
I think that being alone, really being alone, includes not having the company of the self, right?
Not having to what?
The company of the idea of self.
Actually, with lopa.
That's the real meaning.
Being alone with whatever is conditioned at this moment, visible objects, sound, hearing.
But when you are with the self, there's always a friend there.
And so basically it means having When one is truly alone, well, not one, but when there is truly aloneness, then there's the understanding of the moment. So to me, it's the same thing.
Hey, Lottie, is it actually a friend or an enemy?
Both.
That's what I thought at the moment. I was saying friend.
Reminds me of the little discussion on our list about a special place or a suitable place. And so everyone knows a meditation center is not suitable, though Roti may question it. And so he asked, what about cinema, or what about the discussion here, or what about, someone asked about the holy places, like the holy places that Buddha recommended visiting. So we know that in a meditation center, because of the teaching of wrong view, it's not suitable. Or in a cinema, one can say it's just a place for attachment, but of course there can be understanding anytime, even there.
Even
in a meditation center, you'd like to say. And in a discussion, we can say it's suitable for hearing about Dharma, but also opportunities for attachment and so on. And the holy places, one may go because it's recommended, but there can be lots of attachment and wrong view there. So actually, it always just comes back to this moment, I think. Do you have any further?
But I think in a meditation center would be very hard for right understanding to arise.
Meditation center?
Yeah. Yeah, well, there could be a moment when you are distracted and then right understanding can arise.
Right understanding can arise in a meditation center,
but not concentrating on breath or whatever.
Yeah.
In a meditation center will be very hard because you're full of intention, right?
Well, it depends on the person.
Not every moment, of course.
Kunsuchin, and I think Kunsuchit will be interested in this because you remember our good friend Lucas from Poland. So he listened to the answers we gave on the other day and he has some further questions. He says, I fully agree with the answers. He was asking about some problem, about his drinking problem. I fully agree with the answers. It's maybe alcohol and living the life full of pleasure, unaware and heedless, that is a problem, but not maybe just the alcohol. Anyway, if there's an opportunity to ask Ajahn Suchin, I'd like to ask more about what bothers me. And this is for Roti's interest too. For example, in a book of Ajahn Nair, she's not only explaining Abhidharma that is good, but she also stresses, if I remember correctly, the sitting meditation. She was teaching something when sitting, do not move, that it helps to understand dukkha, that pain, feelings are out of control, and anicca. Hope I remember it well. I like her approach, since she taught Abhidharma and meditation, applying what is heard into life as well. I was wondering if I go back to my daily routine of meditation, let's say in the morning half an hour and evening half an hour, maybe this could help me to not to be only speculative about indulging in pleasures of in life, but instead having 5 or 10 minutes to sit and see what's happening inside. Chitta, chetasika and rupa every moment. And this I'm finding like an exercise only, attention vitaka, to observe them for a moment, start to understand it from the beginning. What is Ajahn's answer? Please ask, since you know my situation. I'm trying to change my life and come back to Dharma. I already made a resolution to read a chapter of Abhidharma in daily life every day.
No, why Buddha told us about drinking? Not the other person's word, but the Buddha's word. What did he say about drinking?
He said that drinking, which in itself may not be akusala karma pata in itself, but it leads to heedlessness. It leads to the breaking of other precepts. It leads to strong akusala in different ways.
without panya of the degree that that person will have less and less accumulation for drinking, it's impossible to get rid of it. Because once you make this excuse, like this practice is better for him to sit or to do a thing, but the point is that why do we learn the Buddha's word? Just to understand whatever is now, as it is. And while one is drinking, are there conditions to have such moment?
He said before, no.
So it depends on him. Mm. If he likes to sit and be quiet mind or something like that, then he just wants to sit. Mm. But the only way to understand reality right now cannot be other way at all.
And he also asked a further question which relates to that. This is a simple question to someone he trusts to follow to at the other bank of the river. Though my doubts are here, as you know, I never experienced mangala, any of them. Also now I'm without any protection of Dharma. I stopped studying, practicing Dharma about 4 years ago. 2 years of Dharma protected me, and the last 2 years it stopped. So my life is adharma. I have no right understanding. I'm lazy and I don't know which way to go in life. I would like to know, is it worth it, or is there any benefit to study the Dharma and develop right understanding? And he said, feel free to discuss his private problems. If he can have any help, he doesn't mind.
He just wants to follow the words, not his own understanding of what Buddha said.
One problem is, for example, Lucas, he may have some understanding and confidence that...
Not at all.
No.
Otherwise, he wouldn't say like this.
The thing is, it's different moments. Sometimes people know that the only way out of all dukkha and kilesas is the Buddha's teachings. Yet, because the problem is so immediate, I mean, he's an alcoholic, so he can't help but try to find some other way.
If he understand the words of the Buddha, he would see that it takes quite a long, long, long time to understand.
And when he comes to that conclusion, he's discouraged.
That's why he's
struggling and looking for a way to...
Yes, it's he. All the time.
Yes, it is he all the time. So when even if he goes to do anything else, to a chanap, then it's still a he, and that's the problem. So what would you suggest? I was thinking, tell him to go to Alcoholic Anonymous.
We cannot do anything if he know that the only way is to understand each word of the Buddha. Each word, like Dhamma. He don't know if he know it's not he or him at all. Begin with the understanding that actually there's no one at all. There are different realities arising and falling all the time, from life to life.
I mean, speaking to us, we'll give we think the best.
He followed the words, but not his understanding.
And he also says there are suitable places like the Buddha spoke of, but I think one forgets that this is the suitable place here and now if there's understanding.
That he can drink again.
Yeah.
Go to many new places, but still drink again.
And the other thing he mentioned, I'm just trying to get all the points out first. Many meditation, vipassana, dharma teachers and monks would say, it doesn't matter, no need to think of names, but they are anicca, impermanent, they don't last, no need to think or study the texts or something like that. I wonder or doubt how much truth in it is in it, but I think I agree. So he questions whether there's any point in studying.
It shows that he didn't have any understanding of nama and rupa, because he said that while he's thinking, it's he who thinks, right, or the nama which thinks.
The thing is that from our point of view, the real problem is the wrong view, not the drinking. Mm-hmm. So we would not worry too much about whether he's drinking less or more, but about the wrong view, which he is not thinking about. He wants to get rid of the habit of drinking.
Exactly. So maybe for that purpose he maybe can try rehab or alcohol. I mean, it's not either Buddhism or rehab, you know. But I think he's like trying to use Buddhism like for personal gain or something like that.
He's trying to get rid of crutch.
If he think more about understanding, he don't mind at all, because the habits of drinking hasn't been uprooted yet. But when there is more and more understanding, Panya will take its place.
And the problem also is the wrong view, like he mentions when he questions whether there's any point in studying, and talks about the meditations, and he says he thinks this is part of Vipassana practice in modern Buddhism. So,
and he doesn't realize that at that moment he follows his teacher, which is Lopa.
Yes,
not Ajahn.
Right. It's not Ajahn Neb who's responsible. Yes. It's one's own wrong view, one's own Lopa that's responsible. It's not the teachers who have led one astray in the past. It's one's own clinging or wrong view, listening to what one would like to listen to. It's one can't blame the others.
It's not Ajahn Neb who is responsible that Roti didn't come to the foundation many years ago. It's only my wrong view.
Yes, because of
and wrong view. Mana.
Mana? Why mana?
You thought you were better than Ajahn.
But it's just the understanding. Yeah. Talk about understanding. What's right and what's wrong.
Well, mana is still here and I'm here now.
And one could see, like, when one is so concerned to have less akusala or so concerned to give up drinking, it's actually just strong attachment for oneself all the time, no understanding of Dharma as anatta at all. So of course there's strong attachment to oneself, of course there is mana, of course there is ditti, but it depends whether there is enough understanding to really see the value in hearing and considering, and then one can see what it means to be brave enough to understand at this moment, whether there is enough courage.
What do you mean by brave enough?
Because there has to be such truthfulness. There has to be the truthfulness to understand what the real problem is at this moment and what reality is, to understand that the problem is the wrong understanding and the ignorance now, and the truthfulness to know it's just Dharma, not self. And it takes courage to give up the wrong idea of self. So that's what is meant by having to be brave enough.
Courage in which way?
Today I heard on one of Ajahn's talks that about when the previous Buddha announced forecast this Buddha, the last one, that he was going to be the next Buddha in so many years, and the people were so happy that they will get a chance to hear Dhamma again, even though he said it's going to take four countless whatever. So that is patience, isn't it?
Yeah, that's patience.
Right. And courage. That you go through all this time, it takes a long time, you're going to go through a lot of dukkha in samsara.
Courage and sense of confidence.
And there's so much strong clinging to the idea that I can do, I can control, I can practice, to give up the idea with understanding of I can do, I can control. It takes courage, great virya parami, to really be courageous enough to give up that idea of another place, another time, another practice,
just to understand at this moment, not I who can do anything.
He doesn't mind at all about the teachings because he just wants to see the person who just make him happy.
Take away his problems. Uh-huh. And
yeah, he wants, and he doesn't really want to know what the Buddha calls happiness. He just wants to follow his own idea of what happiness is, which means not drinking or something like that.
And one can see about what understanding is because our friend has studied a lot of the Dharma Sanghani, and yes, he's read a lot of the texts, he reads in Pali, but if it's just book study but it's not about this moment, then it means there isn't that courage to really understand right now Dharma
but
as anatta.
Maybe he thought that Ajahn Mak is better than the Buddha because he didn't follow the teachings. Many people in Thailand believe that someone is arahata. See, very easy.
I think there's always a problem when one looks to follow a person, whether it's Ajahn Neb or Ajahn Suchin or any teacher, rather than checking and considering what the Buddha taught for oneself. So over the years, every word that Ajahn has taught, I've read and checked and considered, because one doesn't just agree or follow or pay respect to a teacher when actually what we're looking at is the Buddha's teachings. So it's really important to see that what is taught is about this moment, to be checked and verified.
Otherwise, instead of what Ajahn Mak said, what about the Buddha said?
Yes.
So, Ajahn, Sarah, what do you mean about checking whether it's taught by the Buddha or not, it's in accordance to Buddha or not, comes down to checking whether it's in confirmation of the present moment?
Actually, I think there are two things. One is the checking whether it is actually in the text as taught by the Buddha or whether it's someone's idea and elaboration, like if a teacher talks about being aware of sitting or going and meditating. Well, let's read in the text where it says this, and I don't find this in the text. But if someone talks about seeing now or hearing now, one can read in the text or the suttas throughout exactly what the Buddha taught. So this is checking what is in the texts themselves as taught by the Buddha. Not really, not so difficult. And the other thing is one needs to check at this moment what is true. Is it true that there can be awareness of sitting, or can there only be thinking of sitting? Can there be awareness of hardness? Yes. So there are two ways of checking.
Yes,
and
I think that you can tell Lucas about this.
Yes. We met him and we talked.
Do you think you could have been able to do that without the advice of Ajahn Suchin? It's very hard. It's very hard with our own, because we have so many ignorance, and it's very hard.
I don't talk about Ajahn Suchin. Could you have done that if it was not understanding what's appearing now?
I mean, if I hadn't heard Ajahn Suchin, I would not be able to prove anything in the Tipitaka, if it's correct or not, according to the teacher I'm following, would be very, very, very hard.
But Ajahn Suchin,
actually, I was never able to do it until last year when I started listening to Ajahn Suchin.
Yeah, but there are people who listen to Ajahn Suchin for years and still get it wrong.
Yes, of course. But in my case, I would have not been able to do it otherwise. Not at all. I never did
it. The only confidence comes when you, whatever you hear, you have checked it with your own experience.
Yes, of course. But it was from hearing her words that I was able to begin to build up like a correct criteria about, you know, the scriptures.
So it depends on the interest and the understanding at the time. Like you said before, 10 years ago, not enough interest or understanding for what was said to make sense, whereas now more opportunities or more understanding. So it depends on the accumulations and the interest and whether one is sincere enough, whether there is enough courage to really understand what is true at this moment, and whether there's enough interest to really check what the Buddha actually said, not just believing it because this teacher or that teacher says something. So it has to come back to the understanding at this moment.
This is how it seems to me, that someone hears your explanation and they understand that what you're referring to is the reality now, and there's remembering of that particular occasion when they heard you talk, so they come back to you to hear the same thing. And when they read the Tipitaka, they read the same thing, means that they understand the teachings to be pointing to the reality now. So isn't it comes down to the understanding that they're only realities?
Because you can see that I studied Dhamma with Ajahn. She's very good on Abhidhamma. I listen to her and have understanding of Dhamma. But I did not believe each of her word. That's why when I read Tipitaka, I can see what's right and what's wrong. But she, without her teaching on Abhidhamma, I have no understanding of Abhidhamma at all. But when I listen to her, I know by considering and reading the Tipitaka that what she's wrong.
And for me, for example, when I went to her and I read her book, that same book, and I went to the meditation center in Wat Bun Kanchanaram. At that time, I was attracted to the concept that not to move, you know.
But she doesn't teach not to move. They teach that in Bun Kanchanaram, but that's not her teaching.
Okay.
I thought she taught.
You thought she taught not to move?
Just sit for a long time until dukkha appeared.
But
by then one knows about dukkha.
Right. And now it seems that she is just replacing self moving and self not moving. It's still self.
Yes.
That's after hearing Ajahn. Right? So before, I didn't think. Before it was just, it sounded logical and, you know, so straightforward. But now with after hearing Ajahn Sutin, I see that there's a problem with that idea.
What about you at the meditation center? What did you think that she thought?
Well, I thought she thought that you should know why you move. She didn't say,
is that
don't
right?
Move.
Is that right?
No, I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm just...
He's just saying that the common idea that
I did
one, one shouldn't move is not what... The common idea that she teaches that one shouldn't move is not what was taught.
What I understood that she thought is that she would not say, don't move. She would say, if you move, you should know why you move.
Right.
But before you move, you know why.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's thinking, and that's very difficult.
That you sat for a long, long time until you couldn't bear. Is that what she thought? So that's the reason why you move. Otherwise, you have no reason to move. Don't move when there's no reason to move.
But she said that bearing was a self. Like forcing yourself to stay, that was also self idea. And that was trying to control, that's what she said. That was
and
not
what's
natural.
The reason? And what's the reason to move? Why didn't move?
Well, she said that dukkha will always is what is forcing you to move. dukkha vedana. It's
forcing
you to.
That's the reason for moving.
That's what it's forcing.
Otherwise,
you
don't move without reason.
Right, but she says that we are always in natural situation. We are always moving because of dukkha. Like my hand is here, and 2 minutes later is here. So she said we should be natural like that. We should not be like you sit and you force yourself.
This might be the late teachings.
A change of topic. Something from Robert. Before he sent a passage from the Papancha Sudani, which we read out last time and we talked about, and like there was a passage which said something like, for one setting up vipassana and the sitting postures, time goes by, there seems to be fire everywhere and sweat runs from the armpit. We discussed how there can be understanding of anything, any time, and this is only an example in daily life. And he asked me to read out this other section to ask for your comment. Indeed, jhana attainment is of great help for insight. Just as a stronghold with a shield is of great help to soldiers, relying on it, he goes into battle, where he fights together with elephants, horses, and other soldiers. When the weapons run out or when there are desires to eat, etc., he turns back to enter the stronghold and obtains weapons, takes a rest, has a meal and drink, and arms himself. Then he goes to battle again, and so on. So his question is about jhana attainment as a great help for insight. Obviously, we know, like, enlightenment with jhana's base is superior and it's an easier path because less unpleasantness. But anyway, do you have any comment?
What is jhana?
Jhana is... Yes. Well, here it's talking about jhana attainments which burn the defilements.
Yes, but what is it? How come?
How does it develop? It develops because of the development of calm and the giving up of clinging to sense objects.
By
understanding.
Understanding what?
Understanding the harm of clinging and all kinds of kalesa.
That is not the way to have calm. Just thinking.
So understanding, well, if one wants to go back to the beginning, understanding why the objects in question condition calm.
You mean that anyone who is bored of experiences through the five senses can do?
No, of course not.
So what's the way?
The way, well, of course it develops with understanding, and
what?
Even with understanding of reality, there is development of calm, which is higher kind.
Without understanding, can any object be object of calm?
No, impossible. Mm-hmm. So there must be understanding from the beginning.
Does not understand reality as yourself, but just want to be calm.
Yes.
That's why those before the Buddhist enlightened just can do as much as that.
Yes.
I heard you say, I think, that the panya of jhana wants to be calm.
Because of what? What is panya that wants to be calm?
Well, it sees the danger in...
Everyone now sees. So can that lead to calmness?
Seeing the danger could lead
yes,
to
yes, we see.
Do we see the danger, though, right now in the sense
everyone
object?
Everyone says, yes, it arises and falls away. It is object of attachment. So without right understanding, which understand that there is no self, there must be attachment to anything. So attachment cannot lead to calmness. That right. Person has to be so wise enough that this moment is what? Kusala or akusala, and how to develop kusala, because kusala is calm, and not just by giving or sila, but longer than that. So it means that not everyone can develop jhana without panya, but that panya is not level of understanding
right.
Reality as yourself.
But what does that panya understand?
Today, who sees the danger of attachment? Today, from morning.
No one really.
No, but just understand.
For a moment.
That's all. But no way, no understanding. That person must be so wise to know the reality, which they don't know at this nama or dhamma, but I am not calm. So still there is the I. But I am not calm, and how to be calm, that must be panya, which knows how.
So his question, though, was about in the text why it says in particular that jhana attainment, we know it's not for us, it's not for the one who hasn't developed understanding, but if it has been developed to that degree of jhana, his question is why it is a great help for insight, because one knows any reality can be the object of
not
insight.
Not everyone who attains jhana can attain enlightenment.
No.
So it cannot be useful for developing or attaining.
If there is no understanding.
And how many arahata or Aryan who had attained enlightenment without jhana? Much more.
Far more.
So
much more.
Yeah.
We could say it is a higher way for those who had developed, but most people hadn't. But for those, I think his question is, for those who had, why is it considered a higher way?
No, not at all. Because not everyone can attain jhana before enlightenment.
No, not at all.
So what help? What help? One
right, only the development of understanding. So when it says that it is of great help for insight, what does it mean then?
He thought that it's great help, but nobody can have jhana right
no,
now.
No, but this is from the text.
Let's take the case.
This is from the Papancha Sutta, and not his idea, but he asks why it says in the text.
And what did the text say?
The text says that jhana attainment is of great help for insight, just as a stronghold with soldiers and...
I'll ask Kampan. To look at that text.
I have the Pali here as well.
I see. Kun Kampan will be here on Saturday.
Okay, because the Pali is quite complicated.
Otherwise, Buddha will urge everyone to develop jhana, if it's great help.
Ajahn, I think this refers to, the case of the person, for example, who had already developed jhana before hearing the Dhamma for the first time.
So he cannot become enlightened.
Sorry?
The person who had attained jhana without the understanding and the development of panya, which understand nama rupa, cannot attain.
No, until he hears the Dhamma. But suppose the person has already developed jhana and then he hears the Dhamma. What this passage is saying is, for that person who is now developing insight...
Better than those who haven't.
He has a benefit of jhana in developing insight.
Like Mokalana attained jhana. Mm-hmm. Sariputta attained jhana.
Right. This is what the passage is talking about, I think. The person who has already developed jhana and then hears the Dhamma and starts to develop insight, it is saying that the jhana is a benefit for that person developing insight.
So
because it gives the analogy of a stronghold of the...
Those people who had attained jhana before the Buddha's time and developed panya, they can attain both jhana and vipassana and enlightenment better than those who have just one.
Yes, and then they can also pala samapati and nirodha samapati and all those.
That's again a particular case if enlightenment is obtained on the basis of jhana, but this is not necessarily limited to that situation. This seems to be saying that a person who had already developed jhana and then develops insight, for that person the jhana is like a stronghold for the soldier in battle. He can go and take a rest and then go out and fight again, sort of thing.
What about when there is time when there is no rice and nothing that people can have, and Moggallana asks Buddha to take them to another tuipa to have food? And what did Buddha say?
To have what? Take with another Dvipa to have food.
Food.
I see.
What did Buddha say?
I don't know.
We don't know, actually.
Sorry.
couldn't. You don't know? Buddha said that if he allowed Moggallana to do so, people after his time will develop jhana and think that one should develop jhana.
I think that's the
path. Mm. And we also read that actually jhana is wrong path. And
it takes how long to have jhana, see? The whole life cannot sometimes. So it wastes time.
That's a very interesting
I see that problem that encouraging people and making them mislead them into thinking that jhana is essential for insight. That's one problem. And
excuse me, because they thought that it's easy to attain jhana rather than attaining the enlightenment,
and they're postponing and they're wasting time. This seems to be saying something a little bit different. It's saying that the jhana makes it easier to have insight under certain circumstances.
Many people in the Buddha's time who had attained jhana couldn't attain enlightenment.
That I understand. But so, are there some certain circumstances where for a person who already has right understanding, if he has jhana, that is a condition for the insight to arise more readily?
Why not for those people who had attained jhana but attained enlightenment without jhana?
I think it's saying that for those who have developed samatha and attained jhana, there is less vexation and disturbance. Like for us in life, there's so much disturbance and vexation, because before it says, this is the quote, when a person whose concentration and insight are still tender practices insight in a sitting posture for a long time, his body becomes fatigued, fire seems to come up inside, drops of perspiration, etc., swirl of steam, mind is vexed, struck, cut and rives, then he enters into jhana. And after taming the mind, making it flexible and pliable, he again practices insight. Then when sitting for a long time as before, he enters into the attainment again and does things as before. Indeed, jhana attainment is a great help for insight. Well, there's lots of conventional language, but I think it just means that, like we read in the Anguttara Nikaya about the way that is slow and hard and the way that is easy and quick and this and this, and it just means it's just talking about different accumulations, like Mahamoggallana's accumulations are different from ours, so the way is less writhing and less vexed than it is, but just by accumulations because of that development. That's all. I think
when Buddha just became enlightened, he thought about teaching, and who was that person that Buddha thought that he should go and
I don't remember the name, but he had very high jhana attainment.
Yeah.
And
why?
Why he couldn't teach?
Why that person?
Because he died already, and he had gone to the Brahma Loka. Okay.
But why he think?
Why did he think that person?
Yeah. Because he was very, very wise.
Accumulation. Without accumulation, like the other who had attained enlightenment, he didn't think about that person.
One who had
such accumulations to have been able to attain the highest jhanas and great understanding.
But isn't it accumulation of past right understanding?
Yes.
What bring you here?
The accumulation of right understanding.
And right understanding is so great for Sariputta. Just for hearing the asashi, he could become enlightened.
Right.
According to accumulation. So we don't know our accumulation.
So the Buddha, in thinking about his teacher, was not thinking about his jhana attainment, but his accumulation of right understanding.
Because not only jhana, but the accumulation that he had
to be
so
able
that,
to...
That yeah. is, yes. Uh-huh. So what we all understand and what you're saying again is that the most important is the accumulation of right understanding.
Right.
But I was also wondering about this just now, since Sarah just read about, the what led to that part about sitting and sweating and feeling agitated. I was wondering whether this could be the reason, because with so much akusala arising, it just conditions more akusala. But at the moment of jhana, at that time, no kilesas. So maybe at that point, it's a condition, better condition for that person to attain insight?
In order to become enlightened, is there enough understanding that all realities are anatta?
It has to be that.
Panya.
Yes, it has
so
to be that.
So anyone who thinks that I'll use or better to develop jhana and then become enlightened, that's wrong.
That's wrong, yes. Mm-hmm. But this so person why didn't one think
say,
like that.
So why one say that the person who had attained jhana can become enlightened easier? No, not this
that's
question.
What it seems to be saying for that person.
But many people who had attained jhana cannot become enlightened.
Right.
So why it's not benefit?
For those people, why it's not a benefit? Well, because they haven't accumulated sufficient understanding.
He just talk about the person who have both, that's all. Better than the person who have just one.
Ajahn, I thought I found very interesting what you said about that there have been more people who have attained enlightenment without...
But not become enlightened.
No, that you said that there have been more...
In the Buddha's time.
In the more people without
jhana.
Without jhana.
Yes.
I didn't know about that. I thought it was the other way around.
No, this is in the Tipitaka.
Yeah, so
and
where is the Tipitaka, I wonder? Should I ask Mr. Kampan?
If you have the commentary to the Susima Sutta, I think...
I think
we
yeah.
can. If you ask on the list, we can find you there.
And about the truth, not just the word, not just the word in book. What do you think?
I cannot.
Even if it's not the truth now or in the book, you need that. But just reading the sutras, people were enlightened while listening to the Buddha. Right? They weren't sitting in jhana.
But there's so much talking about jhana in the scriptures. For example, the Visuddhimagga, it talks so much about jhana and so little about
what other. Level of panya of those people in the Buddha's time or after shortly.
Sorry.
What about that intelligence or wisdom? I mean not people today, but people in the Buddha's time.
Well, the wisdom was much, much higher than
so
today.
So they can understand what Buddha said, right?
Yes.
But for us, each word should be studied carefully.
Yes, correct.
So anyone who talk about jhana, they thought that it's so easy, so very easy. In a practice center, I don't know, whether there is now, people had attained the highest arupa jhana. And if you happen to be there, you might believe if you don't have any idea or understanding at all.
So maybe the reason why I was wondering too why the Visuddhimagga talks so much about jhana. So it must be actually trying to show us how difficult it is.
Right. To know the truth.
In the Visuddhimagga, before it gets to the description of the different subjects of contemplation, there's a number of chapters about what is needed to be done before that. But people skip over those and they just go to the section on the kasina or something and say, oh, this is what you do. They don't really understand, as you say, the complexity and difficulty and the preconditions for developing high levels of samatha.
So before attaining jhana, would you like to sit?
Well,
for attaining jhana, you need to sit, I think, because you need to be very calm.
If you think that anyone can attain jhana, you might sit in order to have it and then have developed jhana.
Just liking is opposite of jhana. You know, you ask, do you like to? And yeah, we like so many things, and that shows how far away we even from
the truth right now.
Even for the at the very beginning, of Samatha Bhavana, usually there has to be understanding from the beginning. There has to be understanding of what calm is. There has to be understanding of how that object can be a condition for Samatha. And a question came up on our discussion list about, in the very beginning, for example, we read about death or metta or earth and can discuss about how considering wisely can be conditioned for moments of calm, but usually we wouldn't call this bhavana yet, just moments of calm. Can one say that for the beginning of Samatha Bhavana, that understanding has to be referring to one of those 40 objects, or in the beginning can there be Samatha Bhavana thinking, reflecting on any topic? For example, like sound, it's not one of the objects, but earth is. But in the beginning, can there be Samatha Bhavana with earth element as object? What about other objects?
Are you bored of whatever is seen, sensuous object now?
No.
So no way to develop some of that.
I mean, Ajahn, I was just thinking, I've never read the Visuddhimagga, however it's written in what order, I don't think we're even on the first chapter of that.
Because without seeing the danger of the sensuous object, one has to understand that, are we now really bored about the sensuous object? See, so don't think about develop jhana.
Or if it's bored, it's like with aversion. Or so even not thinking about it, but we're just looking at what is meant in the teaching. So we know that, for example, the Samatha Bhavana, when it develops, we know which objects are common objects. Like now, even if one's not thinking about it, there may be wise reflection on death at this moment.
That's the object naturally of attachment instantly.
Often.
Not the way to develop jhana.
No. If there is choosing an object, it's definitely the object of attachment. But sometimes in a
even
day,
just read and want to.
That's definitely the object of attachment. Mm-hmm. But not reading, wanting to. I'm talking about like naturally when there may be, one hears about death or reflects on it, there may be moments of calm, not thinking about developing anything.
But not so, jhana yet.
Not jhana, but moments of calmness or development. But the question is whether other objects can be object of Samatha Bhavana or just
but those. But there must be understanding. And really understand oneself, whether one has one inclined to think about not having it anymore, even temporarily.
Yeah,
it has to be the nature of accumulation to have such thinking about detachment from clinging, even it's not the understanding of reality as yourself, but even there's no understanding of it, but there's still some moment that one has accumulated such understanding. It needs understanding. So anyone who reads the book have no understanding, it's useless. Just want to all the time.
So Jen is talking about moments. When one is reading a book, there are moments of wanting to.
So the point of reading is to understand. Anyone who reads, just want to read with wanting to know, but not to understand and have detachment
or
from ignorance.
or if one wants to experience what is being read, then it's clinging instantly.
And that is panya. So without panya, jhana or vipassana cannot develop.
For it seems a little hard to understand how can there be panya when developing jhana, because the sense of self is there. So the idea of self
is that avijja.
The idea of self.
So can avijja lead to jhana?
Well, yes, because
avijja can be.
Because the people who develop jhana, they have a sense of self, an yes, idea of that's yes. Avijja.
Yes, but what is the difference between detachment and attachment? It's still self, but there can be understanding about little what? By little.
Understanding about self?
It's who like, is ready?
Not sense of self all the time, though.
It's like now.
Like now.
There is exactly. Idea of self now, but at moments of understanding, there's no idea of self. So just because there's wrong view of self hasn't been eradicated doesn't mean there can't be understanding of dhammas.
Yes, but
it's just the same.
A person who develops jhana, and you can develop jhana without having any idea about that there's a self, that there's an idea of self, right?
Do you know when you have the idea of self?
Sometimes.
A lot.
But I can reflect about it.
It's still you who know.
Yes.
So it's still you, see?
Yes.
And you know that it's you. You.
But also the person who developed jhana still think it's you who is developing jhana.
But there must be panya to know how to be calm.
Just forget about developing jhana. A person who has a sense of self can have moments of kusala of different kinds. Dana and compassion, consideration, loving kindness. All these kinds of kusala can arise in a person who has a sense of self. Yeah. It's the understanding of those kusala moments that's the object of the panya, regardless of the fact that at other times there may be a sense of self.
Yeah, maybe I understand a little bit.
Like someone can have the greatest metta, but no understanding that in reality there's no person, but still there can be great, great metta. And at those moments of metta, there's no wrong view, no ignorance at all.
I mean, the only difference between that person developing jhana and you is that he has a lot of jhana, you don't. Otherwise, that's his daily life, this is your daily life. Mm-hmm. And when he hears the Dhamma, like you now, mm-hmm. at any moment there can be panya, that person too.
Yeah, but it means that a person who has jhana has a lot of kusala.
Yes.
Yes. And Lucia? Asava?
That's still there.
Why not? As long as one hasn't become enlightened.
So I mean, Parajan is saying that one cannot develop jhana
without panya.
With desire.
Yes.
But the only way to diminish desire
okay.
is by.
Please, desire now.
Desire
now.
It's already there, desire. Well, no, I mean, I cannot choose when to desire and when not to desire. Desire arises by conditions, not by wanting
so
to desire.
So let's desire and see whether it will lead you to
jhana.
Jhana.
No.
Never.
But the only way to diminish...
How about knowing the moments with desire and the moments without desire? Is that possible, even though there's a sense of self? Knowing the moments with desire and the moments without desire. Mm. Knowing that doesn't require to have no sense of self first.
But somehow I understand that the only way to diminish desire is by and seeing that desire is no self.
Well, we're not actually talking about diminishing desire. We're talking about developing kusala that will suppress agusala when it's strong enough. eventually.
I mean, you're right that the jhana does not diminish desire, it just suppresses it. So in you're right in questioning whether that's why, I mean, how useful jhana is.
My question is not about usefulness, it's about how can you do that if you have, how can you...
So mean, what, like, is jhana, first of all? What is jhana?
Well, jhana is the suppression of...
Is it good?
Is it good?
How good?
Well, not very good, but good.
Another question. In times when there's no Buddha's teaching in the world, can people still develop kusala?
Yes, of course.
So that's the answer.
And it's not whether or not there's any understanding of dharmas. It's not someone doing it. They're still just conditioned dharmas. So there are conditions for different kinds of kusala, the conditions for calmness.
Yes,
so it's all by conditions, not anyone doing anything.
Oh, well, that's true for everything. But the person who is developing jhana or has developed jhana does not have that understanding. That person feels that there's somebody who has jhana.
But you are thinking of developing jhana as something different from developing kusala. But it's not really. It's just when kusala gets developed more and more, further and further, then the calm gets stronger and also the concentration gets stronger.
So now you develop all kinds of kusala just to have jhana? Impossible. It has to be the understanding to understand what moment is calm and what moment is not calm. By then you know what is kusala and what is not kusala, but still, no matter how much you do good deeds to have kusala, it doesn't mean that you are now developing jhana. It has to be jhana which see the danger of sensuousness.
She's not jhana.
Panya, which sees the danger of akusala. And today, do you still like, want sensuous objects, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting? For those who understand that all kilesas comes from seeing, hearing, smelling, so that's, is there any way to be the moment without all experiences of sensuous object, without panya, who knows how?
It is clear that even that is panya. Just seeing the danger of sensuous attachment is a kind of panya.
So people today, do they have jhana?
The difference between moments of subtle agusala and moments of kusala requires some kind of panya. And it's this panya that we're talking about the further development of.
By subtle akusala, you probably mean something that may apparently seem like it's kusala,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
As Ajahn has explained, most of the day there's attachment to what is being seen and heard as we go about our daily life, but it's not apparent to us. But to the person who has developed that kind of understanding, it can become apparent.
I was wondering about kamapatha through the mind door. Can you give some examples?
No.
Understanding.
Oh, actually, I was thinking about akusala kamapatha.
Not kamapatha, because no killing, no stealing here.
Mm. So, can you give an example of akusala kamapatha through the mind door?
Avijja.
But if it doesn't condition killing or stealing or some deed, it's not kamapatha.
If you focus long and often enough on something with intense, say, dislike or hatred, that is a type of kamapatha, apparently.
What about the 10 kusala kama?
That's right. What are the 10?
Yes. Kunopadon sahab, please.
Can you give him this?
Kusala Kamma, Pata.
Kusala Kamma and Akusala Kamma.
Ten, yes.
Ten Akusala Kamma.
What are they?
Kaya Kamma. Kaya.
How many Kaya Kamma?
Four.
What are they?
Not killing.
Stealing.
And
so there's four. There's killing, be by four by way of body word, killing, stealing, lying, and the other one would be
sexual misconduct.
Yep, sexual misconduct. That's right.
But lying is
kaya. Yeah.
Because
then three by way of then. No, I think I can remember, Ajahn. Then there are four by way of speech. You've got abhisuna vacha, which is slanderous speech. You've got sampapalapa. Then we said that one, sampapalapa. Then you've got the other one is okay. So then you've got killing, lying, you've got, what are those four, do you mean? Just a moment. Lying, parusa vacha, which is speaking really unkindly to people, parusa vacha. And then what's the other one?
And you asked about mind or true mind.
I think that those ones by mind or you can have...
Abhicha.
And strong one, Vyapada, ill will, and wrong view, types of wrong view, by way of mind, or like if you've got a fixed, firm belief that it doesn't matter if you kill or steal or lie, or those sort of things, they're by way.
So, Achan, abhicha is strong desire?
Strong hatred.
Strong hatred.
Or, no, strong desire. Strong
desire.
To take somebody's covetousness.
Abhicha.
Abhicha, wanting to abhi, which would mean again and again you're focusing on wanting to steal something from somebody. You do it thinking of it all the time.
So it's a particular strength of the kusala.
This is the way to do wrong deeds. Kusala.
For example, if there's just wrong view but it doesn't lead to any speech or action, then however strong that wrong view is, but if it doesn't harm others through speech or deeds, then it's not karma pata.
Yes, all these wrong deeds must be done.
So even when it's abhicha and hatred, it is karma through the mind, or even though there's deeds done through body and body, there must be deeds through body, but the karma is through the mind.
Depending on degrees.
If it doesn't actually hurt anyone, if there's a strong intention to take something that belongs to another, but there's no action, there's no deed, then it doesn't hurt the other, then it's not karma part.
So if I think for a long time to steal something and go and steal, it's different from something I just pick up.
Right.
One then is through the mind door, one is through the body
then
door.
It's mano karma. But it's through the body door because it's been contemplated and planned in detail. But if it's impulsive, just taking something that belongs to the other, then it's just...
Through body door.
Through body door, yes. That's the difference.
I'm not quite following here because my understanding was that if it's you're focusing on when you wanted to steal something, that can become a pata, like abhicha. No, it cannot, Ajahn, you're saying.
Why do you steal?
Why do you steal? Because you really strongly desire something.
But you do not steal.
But you do not steal. But, like, well, okay, let's go on to wrong view, that some of those people in the Buddha's time, the other ones are often quoted, Purana Kassapa and some of those other people, who believe that it doesn't really matter what you do, and they teach that. Oh, so then it becomes, they have this belief that, there's no such thing as cause and effect. For example.
What about have wrong understanding but didn't say anything? Or didn't teach anyone?
Otherwise it would become a pata all the time whenever there's any thought of hurting another or taking something that doesn't belong to one or one has wrong view. So if one has strong wrong view but one doesn't teach the students or doesn't actually cause any disturbance,
okay,
then it's
so
not.
So you're saying then it's the teaching of that belief, like those people in the Buddha's time. Those people in the Buddha's time who.
Hurting other people. That's I think that's the point of Karmapata, is the hurting other people.
It's I mean, affecting other people.
Affecting
always
other
always
people.
Always hurting other
beings.
Through wrong view. And,
so same with right understanding. It's Karmapata only when you speak to someone?
Even when there is right understanding.
At that time, it's that's the only exception?
So for Kusala, it's different from
Akusala. It's different.
Careful.
So same with metta. If you have the strong metta, even if you don't act it out, that can be Karmapata.
So if you have very kind thought to someone, it's kusala, but if there's no speech or deed, it's not as strong as when there is speech or deed or helping someone.
No, I'm thinking about jhana.
Okay, you have metta, but you don't give.
Yes, but what about the people who develop jhana with metta as object?
Only a little metta.
Is that only a little?
Not enough, because you see that when there is metta, akusala, to anyone, anywhere, anything, any circumstance, what will you do when you have metta?
You help someone, you be kind to someone. And
so it doesn't matter whether you had, you do or you do, you don't, but still at that moment it is kusala.
But what about when we read in the text about...
That's why kusala can be accumulated as latent tendency, and kusala, which has done something to condition the result.
So just to be clear, if you're developing jhana with metta as object, means you have very high level of metta.
Okay.
That
how?
Just very high, more and more jhana, metta.
What about your speech and your deed and the way of living?
How can that metta be developed? How can the metta be understood?
I'm talking about at the point when it's jhana, when it's concentration, and at that time there's no person, but just...
Metta needs person to be object. Otherwise,
but
you
no
meet
deed
at
to
table.
Body and speech.
No, because you see that you sit and metta.
Mm-hmm.
You think of the other with
right.
goodwill.
Right, but there's no action to body and speech.
Even so, you think of the other with goodwill because you have person as object. It means your metta is developing from person to person.
So is that Karmapata?
No need to think about that at all. Why? You want to the result or what?
No, I'm just wondering what difference between...
It's accumulated when it's not done. So many degrees.
Couldn't be every moment of metta, could it?
Strong means strong.
And so the jhana citta is Karmapata.
Is right.
Itself.
Oh, okay.
Brings its great result.
No.
Is it what way? By what? Karma or mano?
It's akusala to... No Karmapata right now, no. No. It's just a lot of akusala and some kusala, maybe.
But you cannot just keep quiet.
But no intention to hurt, to harm anyone.
So that is karma. But when you speak with kindness.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Even in discussions, trying to help someone is Karmapata?
Help?
You mean is it kusala first?
No, kusala.
What
means with kusala. Assuming that it's kusala, you're speaking to someone with kusala, explaining the Dhamma to them, or not, or just pointing out something they've said that was wrong. Even that is kusala? Even that is Karmapata?
K.
Can you be patient with metta to help?
Be patient with metta? I don't understand.
If you don't have metta, can you be patient to help?
Metta is there. That's why I'm saying metta.
Patient to take the microphone at that moment. So it depends on the citta at each moment, doesn't it?
Yeah. So
moments
those instances,
of impatience, moments
those instances
to point
can
it
also
out,
be
moments of
kamapatha. I mean, in between. Just
what
to
about
speech.
Just thinking or doing instantly.
I don't think we can say whenever we're explaining the Dhamma to someone it's kusala.
No. I'm not saying whenever. I'm saying that it does happen even in such instances. Even in
there can be, the answer is there can be kamapata when explaining the Dhamma during a discussion.
Yeah.
And there can be moments, there can be understanding of reality, which is kamapata, even if there's no explaining, just at moments of understanding. Like the Buddha said, greater than all the giving, greater than all the jhana, greater than the greatest metta are moments of right understanding.
Do you want to be metta or de?
No. Why? Because it's impossible.
No. Do you want to count how many times share metta?
No.
So the best thing is to understand metta is not self.
Are you a little bit curious about how many days a week you have metta?
No, not at all.
Really?
Ajahn, ask it. Really? Really you're not?
No, I don't think, not particularly metta. Then like that I think about a lot of things.
Now, does one want to know whether it's kusala citta or not, or does one want to know it's kamapata, then its clinging is there for sure. Does one want to find whether it's karma or kamapata at this moment? It's clinging to oneself.
And how not to be putuchana anymore?
How? Oh, just listen and
understand this moment yourself. The best thing.
Even when speaking, it's the understanding any time that's important. Otherwise, it's just assuming and speculating.
So you're not interested in having metta, but you're interested in sophisticated earphones.
Yes. You know, when I'm listening to Dhamma, it means I'm interested in Dhamma.
No.
So when I'm listening to music, it means I'm interested in music. So chanta arises with kusala and akusala.
Change of topic. The other day when we were talking about different pachya, such as, and in particular about, with relation to seeing now, we were talking about indriya pachya, and we were talking about jhana pachya and magga pachya and how they don't condition seeing now, but for example, by jhana pachya, it conditions all the jitas except the dvi pancha vijnana, seeing, hearing, and so on. A couple of points I'd like to clarify. One is that the reason that jhana pachya conditions all jitas except for the 10, whereas magga pachya doesn't condition any rootless ahetuka jitas, is because with jhana pachya, the vitaka arises after moments of seeing and hearing, and any time vitaka arises, it is jhana pachya. Is that correct?
I don't think like that, because you see that when one is asked what is vitaka, it is jhana pachya when there is jhana, but before that there must be little, not much, vitaka before becoming first jhana. See, so when we ask, is every vitaka pachana pachaya, does it burn anything?
Well, this is what I was going to ask, what it burns. For example, the cheetahs immediately after seeing, even in the sense door process, such as
Sampaticcana Santirana, they're ahetuka cittas, but they are conditioned by jhana paccaya. So in what way are they conditioned?
Just to talk about vitakka, what paccaya it can be.
So
it can be
jhana paccaya,
but not any time.
And not any time. So,
but what is it? It is jhana paccaya. That reality, talk about the nature of vitakka.
Yes. So it's the reality that touches the object. So it has to, when in the, for example, in the development of samatha, when it arises, it, with understanding, it touches the object and it burns kalesa at that moment.
It's just like when we talk about that which is there, right? Virya, sammapatthana, sammavayamo, different level. So we cannot say that even at moment of sampaticcana, it is that level of jhana.
No.
But when we talk, what is this cetasika? How can it be paccaya? It can be jhana paccaya.
It can be. So the vitakka
to be when time comes.
So vitakka is... But the question is any vitakka that arises jhana paccaya? Because we know it's not just referring to kusala vitakka, but also akusala vitakka. Mm-hmm. And what about vitakka which arises with other ahetuka cittas? Can it also be jhana paccaya at that time?
Can it?
Well, if not vitakka, then what... jhana.
We don't have to talk about jhana paccaya at moment of seeing.
No, at moment of...
At moment of somebody.
At moment of seeing, there's no jhana paccaya, but at other moments, other...
Sampaticcana.
There is jhana paccaya.
Yes. So, no, I think that what is jhana paccaya? It is vitakka, not other jhetasika.
Yes.
But it does mean that virya with akusala citta, can it be sammapatthana? No. Even it is paccaya.
Yes.
So even it is jhana paccaya, but it's not there as jhana paccaya.
At that
when
moment.
It arises with sampaticcana.
So the my question then is...
Is it always?
No. So my question is, if vitakka is not... Because once you said to me, any vitakka... is jhana paccaya, but you may have just been referring to kusala and akusala vitakka. So if not vitakka, then which cetasika is jhana paccaya at moment of
It is vitakka, but it is not jhana paccaya like when it arises with...
Okay, so it's jhana paccaya, but different from...
Right.
So it is vitakka. You... stress that the most important thing to understand about jhana is that it is burning. But yes, this is why I mentioned these details, because the question is, if we just say that jhana means burning, then what about at moments of sampaticcana? Mm-hmm. Where is there burning? No, nothing is burnt at all. It's just vipaka cittas without roots. So that's why it has to go deeper and deeper. Yes. So we can say, okay, somanasa when it arises, it burns unpleasant feeling, or domanasa when it arises, it burns pleasant feeling. But then we have to consider at this moment how almost every citta now is conditioned by jhana paccaya. And so what is the real meaning of it there?
It depends on the moment it arises. That's all.
Different at each moment. But can one say there is a common thread? So at some moments it's referring to the factors and how they burn the opposites, and at other moments, like sampaticcana now, there's no burning. So what is the common factor why they are jhana paccaya? Yeah.
It's like ekakata cittasika arises with every citta, but when it arises with jhana, it's different. Just that which can be known.
So actually
Even I misunderstood the meaning of jhana pachaya. It seems to be actually only to refer to the function of burning the object. Is that what jhana pachaya is?
Well, Jan's pointing out that it isn't always burning. Like if one's talking about at moments of samatha bhavana, there is burning. Or moments of somanasa or domanasa, there is burning. But for example, at moment of sampatichana, the vitaka, there, it's not burning anything. So the jhana pachaya has to be much, it's much deeper, and we can't know everything.
Because what I understood earlier was that jhana pachaya refers to those chetasikas that are involved in thinking.
Involved in developing jhana.
Not just thinking?
Thinking, it depends, because it's very difficult to explain each reality clearly, because it's beyond just by words that one can understand. But by thinking why it's there. For example, with our vitakka, can on the object of jhana, can it lead to jhana?
No.
So we talk about the factors of jhana. What are the factors? They are these as pachaya for jhana.
Okay. Maybe I got it the other way. Those chetasikas that are jhana pachaya also arises in daily life.
But it's not jhana.
Okay.
And what about then, for example, Domanasa, because it's not pachya for jhana, but it's still jhana pachya. So the domanasa, which is
somanasa or domanasa,
domanasa, which is cannot be pachya for jhana, but it's still jhana, because you just said it's referring to those which are pachya for jhana, but actually it's also referring to those which are pachya for cittas now in daily life. And Domanasa is one of them. So not just those which are pachya for jhana. Different moments.
Jhana factor.
Domanasa.
Jhana
pachya. Somanasa, Domanasa. Yes.
What do you mean by
yes.
Please, I'd like to to hear it.
I think what's being said is that the mention of Domanasa is to show the function of burning.
Yes.
Just to show that the same way that domana is, those jhana factors burn. But the domanasa itself is not jhana factor.
Same word but different meaning.
But if we look at, for example, if we read about, like in the Patana, or we read about different conditions under jhana pachya, then domanasa is always given.
Burn the kusala.
Burn the kusala,
but
yes.
Not jhana factor.
No. It's jhana pachya.
All we these things. Explain. I mean, because it burns.
It the burns the opposite.
My pariyati is what?
Pariyati.
What is pariyati?
It has to be with understanding.
Sometimes people on our discussion list, when we talk about pariyati as intellectual understanding, and actually they ask for textual references, and it's extremely difficult to find the good textual references, and the references are usually to how it's the body of learning or the teachings or the texts. Now we know that if one studies a text and there's no understanding, it's useless. But still, the actual meaning of pariyati, if one reads about it, it seems to refer to the teachings themselves rather than panya. So, do you have any comment?
Because just know that how many cittas are there? Is that pariyati?
It can't be if there's no understanding.
It must be very understanding, very firm.
When firm, and when read, when associating the teachings with understanding.
But Ajahn, what Sarah is saying, and I think Sundara also has many times pointed this out, that in the text they also refer to the words themselves, the teachings, as pariyati.
And the writer think that everyone understands, but actually only those who are so wise
there is actually is a quote about how important it is to... It's in the text. I haven't got this. It's in a dictionary in that Book of Childers. It gives a very good quote about the nature of pariyatti being that it's so... It's important. It's where it describes it. It's not just being learning, that it's actually the yoking. The yoking of what one knows to the development of understanding. There is a strong connection between... Not, it's not just being an intellectual exercise. It relates also to the connecting of to the reality which appears. It doesn't say it explicitly like that, but I'll get you the quote. It's from the... I think it's from the Kuttika Nikaya somewhere. To yoke, to join, which means if it's not, if the teachings are not joined together by way of citta, then it's not, that's part, that's not, it has to be that aspect of it as well. So it's not just a theoretical exercise, it's also a joining of the teachings to understanding.
And there are a lot of those references, like in Anguttara Nikaya, about however much one reads and studies, if there's not the understanding, it's useless, and how the understanding of one word or two words is more precious than all the teachings of no understanding. So there are lots of those. It's good to find references specifically to pariyatti,
of course,
referring to understanding.
There is a difference between pariyatti and patipatti, because patipatti, no words necessary, but pariyatti must depend on words. So that distinction is there.
So, yes, jhana factors. Sata jhanangani vitako vicharo piti ekagata somanasa domanasa upeka. So these are what are referred to in jhana pachya. And then when it comes to be the path factors and magga pachya, it not only includes all the right factors but all the wrong factors.